So I want to speak about the Dharma a little bit. I made a statement earlier today, something to the effect that the defilements or the unwholesome thoughts in the mind can only occur when there's no awareness. And what I'm saying is that much of what gets us into trouble in our life, much of what causes us unhappiness, occurs when we're not really fully aware and not understanding really what's going on. So the Buddha said, "The mind by nature is radiant and pure, it is shining. It is because of visiting forces known as defilements that we suffer." It is because of visiting forces known as defilements that we suffer. So that means that these forces, or a force comes into the mind causing us to suffer. But it's just a visitor. It's not who we are, how we are, or it's not the way the mind is. It's not, there's nothing enduring about it. It's just an adventitious visitor to the mind that arises due to causes and conditions. It's not accidental. You know, it's not kind of like unexplainable, but it seems unexplainable because we're not aware of them. We're not aware of what gives rise to these explosions of emotion or fear or desire or, you know, anger or impatience, jealousy. There's so many defilements. There's so many ways that we suffer with just the quality of mind. You know, what has visited the mind, and when we're not aware of it, of course, then we act it out. When we act out our defilements, we're really hurting ourselves, and usually hurt somebody else too. So it's important for us to begin to understand that in Vipassana practice, we're not just trying to calm the mind down in order to not be reactive. That's the kind of practice that, you know, just a calming practice. If you want to do a mantra or a visualization or some other practices, you can calm the mind down. And if you're good at it, you can calm your mind down really quickly. And it's good to know how to do that. But it doesn't really bring any understanding. You know, why are you getting angry? Why are you getting kind of caught in this insatiable desire? Why do you have these addictive or compulsive or obsessive behavior patterns? Well, because of attachment. Well, why? What's going on there? What are we unaware of, really, that allows the mind to get so entangled in this feeling of desire or jealousy, that it is willing to hurt itself and to hurt others? That's a pretty strong statement. I mean, why do we do that? You know, we all, I mean, generally, we all can see, you know, because you've been practicing awareness a while, you can see that there are some pretty repetitive patterns in the mind. You know, some of them are not so skillful. You know, whether you're acting it out at the refrigerator door or elsewhere, you know, we got them. You know, maybe we've got a good handle on them. Maybe we've learned to kind of manage them in a socially skillful way, but they're still kind of like the bugaboo of our life. Okay. Is there anything else we can do with them? Well, yes. The practice of mindful awareness leading to insight results in understanding the causes and conditions that give rise to these unwholesome states of mind and the sense of self that gets fed by these states of mind and disassembles them, really, takes it apart, takes apart the wrong understanding that allows us to get so inflamed, to get kind of see through the illusions that defilements cast over the mind. It's like defilements enchant the mind into some really weird space of enchantment. It's like, you know, it really would be helpful if I could just, you know, act out this way. No, it wouldn't. It's going to be hurtful to you and others. But somehow, because of the power of defilements and the delusion and ignorance that accompanies them, we don't understand. We understand wrongly, really. So, Utejaniya says, Saito Utejaniya is the Burmese monk that I've been practicing with for the last several years. He says, it's not you who removes the defilements from the mind. Wisdom does. So it's not like we can use our willpower. We can use our mental muscle, will, you know, our intention to remove the defilements. You cannot. We can temporarily suppress them with a concentration or a tranquility meditation. True, and that's a very willful activity. But that just temporarily suppresses the defilement. Wisdom aims to understand the defilement or understand the conditions that give rise to defilement so that we can really uproot the tendency towards this defiled behavior in the mind. So how should we understand these visitors to the mind? Defilements. How should we understand them? Well, they are these habitual, reactive states of mind, most of which seem to just kind of appear kind of on their own when we're least expecting them. You know, they always take us by surprise. You know, when you get this explosive anger or this explosive desire or obsessive desire or fear, they don't just kind of say, oh, here I come. You know, you're going to be fearful here in a little while. It's like, boom, it's on you and you got to deal with it. So that's how ignorant we are of the conditions that give rise to these, you know, unwholesome, unskillful states of mind. The interesting but unobserved fuel for these defilements is restlessness. And restlessness is this aimless wandering of the mind in thought. It's because we let the mind kind of aimlessly wander around just thinking and kind of scheming and strategizing and kind of meandering and just kind of da-da-da, then we end up with a really unwholesome state of mind. That's the fuel for them. They're also, all of the defilements are accompanied by some form of delusion. Either either delusion or ignorance. Ignorance is when we don't know at all what's going on. And delusion is when we know what's going on, but we understand it wrongly. And I'll give you an example of each. Today, while you were somewhere during your sitting practice, while you had every intention to be aware from throughout the whole sitting, there were periods of time when the mind just wandered off. Or we should say the mind, what arose in the mind was not observed, right? And we were lost in thought. You know, and you're off in a train of thought that at the time it was occurring, you weren't aware of it. You didn't know you were thinking. You didn't know you were sitting here. You didn't know your name. You didn't know if you were sitting, standing, walking. You didn't know anything. You didn't even know what the content of your thought was. You didn't know whether you liked it or not. You didn't know anything. You were absent. But when the mind kind of, when mindfulness and awareness kicks back in, you realize, oh, here I am. And sometimes you can get a kind of a split-second momentary review of everything you've just thought about. And you can see it. You can see that whole train of thought that went by unaware, right? Did that happen to you today? Hello? Right. Now think about that. No, really, really. Just stop for a minute. You sit down. You have every intention. You're doing the best you can. You're an honest, sincere, energetic, wise, you know, kind of smart person. And you say, I'm going to watch the mind. And the mind says, oh, yeah? It's as if the mind says, oh, yeah? Well, let me just show you something about my power. You know, and the mind goes off into la-la land, and you don't know it. And, you know, you may not know it for a few minutes or more. Well, that's what's surprising. It's not just a split second, right? Isn't that amazing? I mean, how much of our life is spent unaware? Now, when you get this quick review, when you look back and you see where the mind has been, it has not always been in a very skillful space. It's been in there scheming, strategizing, whinging, whining, complaining, you know, doing something, you know, and those thoughts, even though you're not aware of them, are karma. Those are planting seeds of intention in the mind. Okay, that's not good. And so it's as if these thoughts or these defilements enchant the mind into some la-la land, right? It's unbelievable, but it's true. I mean, you can see it. Now, if you, look, go out on the streets, Seattle, or anywhere in your neighborhood, just pick somebody random that, you know, just say, hey, are you aware of your mind? Are you aware of your thoughts in your mind? Oh, yeah, sure, no problem. Yeah, I got them. But you know they aren't. Even when we're trying to, after years of trying to, we can't. And so why is it that people who don't even practice mindfulness can be so sure that they are aware of their thoughts? Delusion. Total delusion. And yet, under the guise of, well, normal, delusion is normal. I recently read about one of these research, scientific research projects that somebody had designed. And they were asking people to kind of evaluate their level of awareness. And the interesting thing was, people who didn't practice mindful awareness, who were drinking alcohol, had a higher appraisal of their awareness than those who practice awareness and weren't drinking. Explain that. You know, that is... that's deluded. Now, delusion is an interesting thing. Delusion is not quite as blind as ignorance. I'm making a distinction here, using different words just to make a distinction. Ignorance is, you don't know anything about the thought. You don't even know what you're thinking. You don't know where you are, you don't know anything. Delusion is, you know you're thinking, you know where you are, you know what you're thinking about, and you misunderstand it. You think of it wrongly. You don't understand what you're thinking. And the example I give, you know, anybody who's been on a retreat with me has heard this before. But you know when you fell in love? You know, that one or dozenth time you fell in love? And the person you're looking at, you look at that person, you say, wow, you are it. Man, you're the epitome of my dream come true. Right? And you think there is nothing wrong with this person. This person is perfect, you know, in every dimension. And then, you know, the full moon rises or the dark side of the moon rises, whatever it is, and you wake up one day or you see that person later and you say, Jesus, what happened to you? You know, God, you're not the same person I met, you know, a month ago or 2 years ago or whatever. It's like, you've changed. You know, and you look at them and it's hard to find anything right or pleasant about the person. This is temporary, of course, just like the first one was. But we, you know, when desire arises in the mind, it makes us see only the pleasant aspect of what we're looking at. You can't see the unpleasant aspect. When aversion arises in the mind, this visitor to the mind, it makes you see only the unpleasant aspect of what you're looking at. And so you're seeing the object, but you're misunderstanding its nature. And that's the nature of desire and aversion. That's what they do. That's their capacity. That's their special enchantment, is that that's what they cause you to do. That's how they cause you to think. And you believe it. And we've been doing this for a long time. I mean, there's none of us here that are still 20. You know, when you're 20, 25, okay, you haven't had that much experience, so you can believe your thoughts. But come on. You know, we've been at this game for a long time, and we still believe our thoughts. Right. When are we going to learn? Okay, so that's what these defilements are. But the defilements are not a mistake. They're also part of the Dharma. They are part of the Dharma in the sense that this is the way it is right now. The defilements arise because of causes and conditions. But the defilements are so habitual and they arise so frequently that we've accepted and kind of taken them for granted now. They're so common, we don't even notice them anymore. We just act them out, to a degree, some level of them. I mean, at the grossest level, okay, we don't get that angry, we don't act on our desires too carelessly, you know, we're not too addicted and obsessed and compulsive, but nevertheless, they still arise. It's a short step, or it's a slippery slope, I don't know which one, both, between a momentary arising of a defilement and a recognition that I've been here a lot in the past. You know, impatience. Yeah, for those of you who've heard my story, you know, I was not born with the patience gene, or it seems that way, and impatience is my kind of my default setting towards everything. It's my initial reactive response to everything. It's just be impatient. It's a short step from a momentary experience of impatience to thinking, I'm always impatient, and to believing, I'm an impatient person. But by the time it gets to the I'm an impatient person, I have solidified an identity of who I am, how I am, as if it was real and ever-present that way. I really am an impatient person because I've seen it so many times. But the Buddha said, no, you're not an impatient person. Impatience has been an adventitious arising in the mind, a visitor to the mind frequently. Yes, and you've acted on it strongly. Okay, so it seems like it's really who you are. And whatever other story you're telling yourself about yourself is just the same way. It may be recurring, it may be frequent, it may be strong, it may feel intractable, but it's just a visitor. It's just a momentary visitor frequently. Well, this gives us a clue, because when we appropriate a momentary defilement as an identity, it really gets locked in there. And we take it for granted. We stop working with it. We just figure, what's the use, almost? It's not even like we figure, what's the use? We don't even consider it. We just know that's the way we are. But actually, the defilements are part of the Dharma. they are the truth of the moment. They arise due to causes and conditions. They're not a mistake. And if we are willing to look at them with this understanding, we can begin to disassemble their enchanting power in our mind. We could say that they are an opportunity, not an obstacle. We can become aware of them with mindfulness, and we can understand them through the development of wisdom. How do we do that? The first key to working with the defilements is to hear a talk something like this, meaning to get some information that the reason we suffer is because of visitors to the mind. Just to hear that is like, oh, really? You know, it's not like I'm just a miserable wreck of a human being. That's not it. It's just that there's been some visitors to the mind that have occurred frequently and we haven't seen them. Okay, well, that's a different perspective. That information is valuable because if you don't think it's possible to disentangle or to free yourself from these the grip of these defiled states of mind, then you won't try. You won't do anything about it. You'll just figure, that's who I am. It's intractable and nothing's going to change. I'm not going to change and they're not going to change and I'm just going to have to live with it, doing the best I can not to kinda hurt anybody. So we need this kind of information to know that there are these visitors to the mind and that they're dangerous because they cause us to suffer. And then we need to hear, what are these defilements? Well, in the text, in the commentaries, they say there's more than 1,000. But the big three are, attachment, aversion, and delusion. And they can appear in, attachment is obsession, compulsion, addiction, desire, wanting, yearning, being identified with experience. These are all forms of desire. Aversion appears in many different forms. There's a striking out aversion of anger, rage. There's the internalized version of aversion, which is depression, frustration, disappointment, fear. And there's this kind of simmering, whinging, whining, irritated, impatient form of aversion. Aversion has got a lot of different colors. And then delusion or ignorance, wrong beliefs about everything, but primarily either ignorance, not knowing, or delusion, knowing wrongly. So there, now you know what we're up against. It's like my whole personality. I mean, it sometimes seems like my personality is, there's some good qualities, I'm generous and I'm kind, but man, I got a litany of on the other side of the column, on the other column that's also pretty impressive. Because once we have the information that defilements are visitors, they're dangerous, they cause you to suffer, and these are what their names are, then we can look for them. We can begin to, in our practice of awareness, we're going to see them. They're going to arise. And we can recognize, when we get caught, or when we're in a story, a rant, a rage, a desire, an obsession, a fear, a jealousy. And we can recognize them by the story they tell in our mind. Now, not everybody accesses the defilements through the thoughts. Some people have the ability to just access their defilements through feelings, through the emotional feelings, or through the feeling in the mind. Different people have different ways of coming to know the defilement that has arisen in their own mind in their own way, in their own time. So I don't want to kind of give a prescription of how it has to happen for you, but in whatever way you can kind of grok it, kind of get it, that the mind is inflamed, is being visited the mind is being visited with something that's causing a lot of suffering. That recognition is really hard. It's hard because, I've stopped using the word hard. I'm trying to stop using the word hard. It's challenging because we're so accustomed to these states of mind that they just slip in, act out, slip out without us even recognizing them. We're so habituated to them, we don't identify them. And so it takes a real resolve, a real interest in our practice to want to recognize the defilements. It's not like you have to say, I'm a bad person, let me count the ways. That's not what we're doing. But we are saying, you know what, defilements are slippery. They're very subtle. They can be very gross, but they're oftentimes very subtle. And I'm so used to them, I don't recognize them. So let me just pay really close attention. And the way you can know if a defilement has arisen in the mind is look for all those gaps. I was mentioning, notice what you notice, but notice what you don't notice. Because what you don't notice is usually filled with a defilement. That space of mind where you've been absent, where you haven't been aware, or you haven't recognized what's going on. I'm not going to say all the time, but much of the time, that's where the defilements are playing. Now, as soon as we recognize that there is a defilement has arisen and it's kind of jerking us around, the tendency is to want to say, no, not me, or just to whack it, nuke it, just get rid of it. So it's like, because good Buddhists don't have those kind of thoughts, or, the whole goal of spiritual practice, Buddhist practice, awareness, insight, and liberation is to get rid of them. Well, yes, they will eventually be understood and no longer arise in the mind or arise less frequently or with less intensity. But in the meantime, right now, they're in control. So relax. The first step is to recognize them, and the second is to relax. Relax. We don't need to get reactive to the defilement. We want to be able to acknowledge it without adding another layer of aversion or judgment to it. So relaxing is really a way of acknowledging, this is the way it is right now. This is a defiled state of mind. Ouch. It's not pleasant. I'm not proud of it, but I'm also not in denial of it. So relax. Relax the reactive tendency of mind to kind of dismiss it, minimize it, deny it, nuke it, whatever it is, to get rid of it. Utejaniya again says, the mind is not yours, but you're responsible for it. Meaning, these defiled states of mind, they arise. We can't keep them out. They do arise. So in that sense, the mind is not yours. You can't control the mind and make it not think these thoughts. But once those thoughts arise in the mind, you got to take responsibility for them. You got to do something with them, or they're going to really make a mess of your life. So he can say, the mind is not yours, but you're responsible for it. Whatever's going on in the mind, you can't control. You can train the mind, and that's your responsibility. That's how you responsibly take care of the mind, is learn to recognize and train the mind so that it's not causing you so much suffering. One of the I've been talking about noticing the causes and conditions, understanding the causes and conditions that give rise to different states of mind. One of the causes and conditions for the arising of the defilements is not paying careful attention. So just in the effort, in our efforts to be mindful, if we're careful and if we're attentive, we're going to, if not prevent the arising, we're going to see the arising of the defilements. And this is a skillful state of mind, or skillful activity of mind. And you can be sure that when the attention is weak, or if we don't understand that this is a defilement and therefore harmful, wrong view of this state of mind, or weak attention, or discontinuous energy, you know, where there's not a persistence to the energy or a persevering energy, any of these are causes and or the condition for the arising of a defilement in the mind. So when we recognize a defilement has arisen, and we've kind of arrested the reactive tendency towards it, and relax a little bit, just acknowledge that it's there, then we have to exercise some restraint. The tendency is to, of course, act them out. When you feel sleepy, sleep, sloth, and torpor is a defilement. When sleepy, you know, the tendency or the impulse is to kind of take a nap, just kind of doze off, just kind of zone out, whether you lay down or not. That's not the issue. The issue is to just kind of zone out. And so we're really choosing to act out this defilement. Or when desire arises in the mind and you want whatever it is you want. You want another drink, you want another bite of something that's not particularly good for you, you want to do something that's, you know, either illegal, immoral, or fattening, as they say, then, you know, you want to act it out. You think the way to get rid of this desire is to do it. And of course, yeah, I mean, that kind of gets rid of the urgency of the desire, but it just makes the desire stronger. So we, in both cases, or with all of the defilements, we need to exercise some restraint. We recognize it, we relax, we don't. But we also need to exercise some restraint and not act it out. Not always easy, you know, and sometimes, you know, in our cultural and social conditioning, restraint doesn't get a lot of airtime. You know, it's really, you know, we got the go for it lifestyle. You know, you want it, go for it. You don't want it, get rid of it, go for it. You know, and I mean, that conditioning is, well, it's good for entrepreneurs and creative people, but, you know, for liberating the mind or for understanding the cause of suffering may not be such a skillful attitude to have. Nevertheless, to the extent that we can exercise some restraint, instead of putting the defilement out there on others, we keep it in here to work with it. And it's hard, you know, to not express your anger, to not express your jealousy, to not act out your fear, to not act out your desire or sleepiness or whatever it is. Then you got to work with it inside yourself. You're not speaking it, you're not acting it. It's still there. It's still arising in the mind with all of its fury and all of its, you know, confusion and obsessiveness, if you will. And so it can feel like a pretty lonely journey to deal with your own, the arising of the defilements in your own mind by exercising restraint. The fourth step in working with the defilements is to understand them as an opportunity to develop awareness rather than a judgment of who you really are. They're not a judgment of who you really are. And when we can reframe our misunderstanding of the defilements, then we have encouragement and an inspiration to work with them. But it takes this reframing because, you know, we know that, you know, being an angry person or being angry or acting out jealousy or being afraid or, you know, insatiable desire, any of those, it's not nice in a kind of a general kind of human way. It's not nice to be that way. But that just judgment of it's not nice is not a very skillful way of working with them. Why do you want to work with something that's not nice to be experiencing? So to understand them as a visitor to the mind that have arisen due to causes and conditions, one of which is always lack of awareness or lack of wise attention, and to understand that they can be understood, they can be observed, they can be understood. We can disentangle our minds from these defilements. No, it's not who we really are, and yes, we can be free of them. Well, that's a lot to kind of believe about the defilements when they're arising. But we need to remember that these defilements are like that. Just a visitor, an opportunity for awareness. You can be free. Then no, they're not who you are. And yes, you can be mindful of them. You can be aware of them. And yes, wisdom can understand them, and you can be free of them. Okay, but there's some work involved. But just having that map of the mind, just having the map of the possibility, this is the path of Dharma growth and understanding, just having that as an ally in your attempt to work with them is a huge benefit. Just hearing the fact that you can work with the defilements. No, it's not shameful to recognize the defilements in the mind, in your experience. But there is a real... it takes a lot of courage sometimes to acknowledge what you're really feeling, experiencing, and being willing to work with it. Not necessarily to have hope that you're going to uproot it from the mind, but just to have the kind of the confidence to engage the defiled state of mind with awareness, trusting that there'll be some growth in understanding if you persist and if you really are sincere in wanting to understand the nature of these defiled states of mind. You will come to understand them. So reframing our experience or reframing our wrong understanding about the defilements is a real support for working with them. Again, Sayadaw Tejaniya says, try to recognize that defilements are simply defilements. They're not your defilement. Every time you identify yourself with them or reject them, you're only increasing the strength of them. The wandering mind is not the problem. Your attitude that it should not be wandering, that's the problem. The object is not really important, but how you observe it or view it is. Thoughts are just thoughts. Feelings are just feelings. Yogis often make the mistake of expecting or hoping for good experience rather than being willing and trying to work with the defilements. You know, when you were thinking of coming to this day of practice or this weekend of practice, or when you think of going to a retreat, do you think, oh, I'm going to go to a retreat and just kind of chill out, calm down, get open, spacious, loving, peaceful, and then come home and just kind of float through the house and through work for the next week? Is that what you think? Or do you say, you know what, I'm going to go on retreat. I know it's going to be one grueling battle with defilements, one after another, the whole time. But that's what I'm going for, to really get knowledge and understanding of how to work with these buggers. What's your mind do? Well, okay, let's be realistic. It's a little bit of both. We know it'd be nice if, but, well, in the meantime, maybe we'll work with the defilements when they arise. As long as you're aware of the defilements, Sayadaw says, as long as you're aware of the defilements, you're doing well. Think of that. As long as you're working with them, good enough. So we recognize the defilements as it has arisen in our own experience. Relax. We don't have to get reactive to the fact that's arisen. We want to exercise some restraint, not just act them out blindly, and reframe our understanding so that we are encouraged to work with them. And then mindfulness comes into effect, into play, because mindfulness is learning to observe, really. Learning how to observe the defilement rather than just act it out. How to receive it, really. How to feel it. How are you going to really learn the nature or learn of the nature of these defilements if you kind of keep them at a distance? If you're just thinking about them, you're not getting very close. If you're just acting them out, you're far from understanding them. So we actually have to receive them. Now, I don't mean that you get lost in them, but you do have to feel them, because they're always accompanied by a feeling, mostly unpleasant. You know, if you really feel disappointment, if you really feel frustration, you really feel desire, you really feel jealousy, you really feel whatever it is, mostly they're pretty unpleasant. Now, we think desire is pleasant. The object, as long as we're focused on the object of desire, that's pleasant. But the actual feeling of desire in the body, in the mind, not pleasant. But let's face it, we don't like unpleasant. We don't like unpleasant feelings. We'd rather avoid those things. And we do. You know, mostly we act out our unpleasant feelings to get rid of them. So a good Buddhist, this is not true. This is just my dogmatic assertion. You know, a good Buddhist should really be willing and interested in exploring unpleasantness, because we know it's going to happen anyway. Right? So what are we trying to avoid? Hello? Is there anybody in the room that doesn't experience unpleasantness a lot? It's like, of course, it's obvious. So why are we still resisting it? Why are we still afraid of it? Why are we still, you know, denying it and kind of squirming and, just kind of whinging and whining about it? It's a fact, you know? We'd be much kinder to ourselves if we just said, you know what, there's going to be some unpleasantness today. Let me welcome it fully. Let me just really be aware, fully aware of when the body feels unpleasant, when the emotions are unpleasant, when the mind feels unpleasant, because it's going to happen. And if we're willing, if we know that this is the way it's going to be, and we're willing to do that, we're less likely to get lost in the defilement, which is acting it out. Yeah. So, how's your unpleasantness today? What kind of unpleasantness are you experiencing today? You know, good Buddhists should greet each other with, how's your unpleasantness today? Have you reached your quota yet? In a way, we're kind of like, bring unpleasantness out of the closet, you know, like deal with it, you know, in a skillful way. It's kind of tongue-in-cheek, but it's true. Anyway, so Sayadaw again says, use the appearance of the defilements as an opportunity to investigate their nature. Now, I've said a few things about the nature of sleepiness, the nature of aversion, the nature of desire. It causes you to only see the pleasant, or causes you to only see the unpleasant, or whatever. How do I know that? Well, if you observe these defilements, you'll see what they do. You'll see, oh, this is how it arises. This is what it feels like. This is what it does to my thoughts. This is how it conditions my thoughts. These are how I'd like to act it out. This is how long it lasts. This is how it dissolves. It leaves by going this way or that way. And if we observe it, you'll begin to really understand the nature of each of these defilements. But you have to be willing to kind of bear with it. You can't observe it if it's not there. It's not about thinking about desire or thinking about aversion or thinking about jealousy. It's actually experiencing it when it's there. And then it's experiencing it without judgment, without a kind of a sensor at the door. Just like, open up, this is it. Let me really feel fully what this is like. Now, it's like the experience after lunch. If you feel fully but you don't recognize you're aware of it, you'll get sucked in. You'll just fall asleep. But if you feel the emotion fully with awareness, you won't get sucked in. You'll be able to see it as an object, the visiting object that has arrived at the mind's door. And you'll be able to greet it, kind of keep an eye on it while it's there, rummaging through your house, you know, and then show it the door, and you'll see that it leaves. You won't get entangled in it, saying, move in, I'll give you a long-term lease. No. It's not like that. With awareness, or with mindful awareness, and the receiving of, you know, the opening to receive this object, this defiled state of mind, then we begin to really recognize, or begin to realize its nature. And what is it that we realize about these defilements? Well, we realize their individual nature. Desire causes you to focus on only the pleasant. Aversion does this. Jealousy feels like that. You know, fear does this to the body and the mind. Okay, so you begin to grok them. Begin to get the picture. Kind of begin to get the what would you call it? The fingerprint. You know, or the mind print of each of these defilements. Okay, so when you get familiar with them, you can recognize the conditions that lead up to the arising, a full-blown, you know, defilement attack. And you can see it coming. You can see, here's what's happening. You know, sometimes just that much awareness can kind of put it on hold, put it aside. But sometimes not. With the ability to recognize and acknowledge the qualities of each of these defilements, we are less seduced by them, and we're more able to just acknowledge them when they arise. We just acknowledge, oh, here it is. Okay, so we keep an eye on it. And we don't have to kind of struggle to get rid of it. We're not trying to get rid of it. We're not acting it out. We're just with it. Then an interesting thing happens. We shift, the awareness shifts from the experience of the defilement to understanding the nature of the defilement. And what we begin to understand is that as seductive as they may be, they are mostly very unpleasant experience. This is dukkha. This is seeing the, or realizing the dukkha characteristic of the defilement. You know, we confuse ourselves, we delude ourselves thinking, you know, this experience of desire is really pleasant, or expressing my anger really is a good thing to do. We delude ourselves that way. So when we begin to realize the nature of all these defilements is unpleasantness or painfulness, unsatisfactoriness, then this insight helps us to let go. Because it's the insight into the three characteristics, one being dukkha, that if you understand that something is really suffering, really unpleasant, really unsatisfactory, why are you going to pick it up in the mind? If you deeply understand this is only going to lead to suffering, then you won't pick it up. The mind won't pick up reactivity of the defilements as an option dealing with any situation. The other realizations that we have is that if you observe any of the defilements, you will see that they don't last very long. The story about why you should be angry, the story about why you're fearful, that may go on for a long time. But the actual experience, as you feel it in the body, in the mind, it doesn't last that long. It doesn't. It can only last a long time if you keep telling yourself the story, reaffirming the story. But if you take the story of this defilement, why and how and who and, you know, the kind of the context of it, and you put that over here, And you take all of the physical sensations that are conditioned by that defilement, because the physical experience of love or hate and fear and jealousy and desire are very different, and you put all those sensations over here, what's left in the middle, when the story's over here and the sensations are over here, is the feeling of the defilement itself in the mind. When you feel that defilement in the mind intimately, it doesn't last very long. It almost can't last in the light of awareness. It can't. So we see that not only is it in its direct experience really unpleasant and unsatisfactory, it's also impermanent. It just doesn't last very long. So why should we get all entangled in something that doesn't last more than a split second, or not much longer than that? Why do we get so inflamed and so kind of caught up in a strategy of acting out or dealing with or getting rid of something that leaves by itself anyway, if you're paying attention? It's a way of letting go. And the third realization about these defilements is that they seem to arise in my mind. They cause me suffering. They're all about my happiness or unhappiness, satisfaction or dissatisfaction, and they're, you know, kind of like a display of my personality. But once you see and you understand, oh, these things arise due to these causes, these conditions, they're impermanent, they're really unsatisfactory, you can see that they just, you know, as Sayadaw Tejani says, they're not yours. They're defilements that arise kind of impersonally in the mind, and if you see them, they're not yours. If you tell yourself a story about them and imbibe them and kind of entangle yourself in them, then it feels like it's my defilement. But it's not. It's not who you are. You don't have to get identified with them. But it takes that clarity of awareness and understanding to see that they are really just impersonal forces at play in the world, at play in the mind, and you don't have to take them on. You don't have to. These three insights into impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, and the impersonal nature of the defilement are the insights. These are vipassana. And by mindful observation of these experiences when they arise, we gain these insights. These insights free the mind from suffering. Because when you really understand this activity of mind is really unpleasant, it's unsatisfactory, always will be. It's not me, it's not mine anyway, and it doesn't last very long. It's impossible to hold on. The mind won't hold on to this anger or this fear. It sees through the identification with these defilements, and the mind remains free. This is not an overnight or one-time thing. It takes, of course, it takes repeated observation of the defilements to come to this these understandings. But every step of the way that we're willing to work with the defilements in this way helps to undermine their grip on our mind. It helps to disenchant us from the power of their story. Normally we think, oh, when you're disenchanted with something, oh, that's kind of an unpleasant feeling. You know, it's kind of like, oh, I feel disenchanted with you. You didn't meet my expectations. Well, when we get disenchanted, it actually means to be, you know, not deluded. So we want to be disenchanted with the defilements, because then we're not going to be so confused and deluded by them. We'll really have some wisdom and understanding. And this is the path of awareness. This is the path of awareness and insight that we are practicing here. This is why we do the work we do. It's not that it's always pleasant, and it's certainly not easy, and it may take us the rest of our life, but Hey, what else you got to do? As long as you're aware of the defilements, you are doing well. In order to understand defilements, you have to watch them again and again. What can you gain from just having or expecting good experiences? If you understand the nature of the defilements, they will dissolve. Once you're able to handle the defilements, good experiences will naturally follow. It's not you who removes the defilements. Wisdom does that job. Let's just sit for a minute and let these words settle in and quiet down.